Good evening, everybody. We begin number 18 in a series of 1,000. This evening, we're going to start from the end. There were a surplus of questions last week, and some came throughout the week that we have, as of yet, not dealt with. And we'll start with the questions. First one came from somebody who heard all the tapes. I'll leave this in writing to Henry. Very good question, and health is a worthwhile topic for a shiur. Question: what do you say to a child who wants to do something that one of the parents did when he/she was younger, but is halachically questionable at best? For example, if parents don't want their child to go to the movies, but when the child finds out that the parents went to the movies, how can the parents tell the child not to go? Won't the child find this hypocritical, and how do you answer that? That's the question. In class, this would pass for an essay. That's the question. In other words, simplify things. How do we walk the tightrope between teaching our children that people are human beings and that they are fallible, they are imperfect, everybody makes mistakes. On the other hand, we want to make sure that they don't make the same mistakes that we made once upon a time. Very good question. Answers as follows. First thing is that an ounce of prevention in this case would have been worth a pound of cure. There's no mitzvah anywhere for you to tell your children about that you went to the movies when you were kids. It's no mitzvah anywhere, it doesn't say it. As a matter of fact, if you feel that you've done tshuva for some particular thing, there's a halacha in the Rambam that you shouldn't tell anybody about it. I'll read it to you. Tevach Godol, Leshov, it is a great praise for the person doing tshuva, Sheyizvoyde Barabim, the idea of Shov, Hem Umagala Averois, Shebeinoi Lebein Chaveroi Leacherim. It's a very big praise for the Baal tshuva that he should publicly declare that he is no longer harming those people that he has harmed. We're talking here about averus against other people. And if you harm somebody, you should publicly declare that you are no longer harming him. We're talking, loosely translated, a public apology. Oimer lohem, and you say to the public, Omnom chatosi leploini, I harmed so-and-so, the Asisi loikach v'kach, and I did such and such. V'hareini yoim shov umisnache, and I regret it, and I will no longer do it. Medvar mamurim, says the Rambam. What are we talking about here? V'aveiro shemeinotim l'chaveiro. We're talking about things where you harmed other people. Aval v'aveiro shemeinotim l'mokoim. Aveiros that are between you and Hashem. Einoi tzorech l'farsei ma'atzmoi. You have no need to publicize them. The azus ponim hiloi, and it's somewhat of an arrogance. Somewhat, it's arrogance, says the Rambam. Im gilom, if you reveal them. Rather, continues the Rambam, that you should do tshuva between you and Hashem, and that's it. Now the Ravid adds here that in a case of an avera that was done publicly that everybody knows about, the tshuva also needs to be done publicly, even if that avera was merely between you and Hashem. There is no mitzvah at all for you to tell your children what you did when you were children. If it's something that you regret, and something that you did tshuva on. There's also, by the way, to a husband and a wife, no mitzvah, your wife ought to tell your husband about some terrible things you did when you were a kid. You never know when that piece of information that you revealed can come back to haunt you. Certainly, with your children, there's no mitzvah at all. You shouldn't do it. The only thing is, if parents are, for instance, balei tshuva, and the children know it's pretty obvious the grandparents are not frum, of course, parents have to explain to the children what it's all about. Then, we need the cure. But before we get to that, The first thing we have to understand is, in this case, the best medicine is the prevention. However, as I said, there are certain cases when parents inevitably must explain to the children what their past was all about, to an extent, as in the case of Balei Tshuva, and there are cases where parents just, for whatever reason, do reveal to the children what they used to do. Say you're showing your children an album, picture album, photo album, when you were a kid, and the children notice certain things about you that don't exactly jive with the way you are now. For whatever reason, children find out. The answer is as follows. It depends on the attitude that you have towards the things that you used to do. If you really feel that that act that you used to do, that behavior that you used to use, that mannerism that you used to have, is something that you regret, then the truth is that has to, and it will, come out in your voice. Very often, when parents in such instances speak to their children, and they say, well, I used to go to the movies. They say it with, they know that it's a thing that they don't want their children to do, but they say it with not 1,000% regret. The Rambam says that somebody that does tshuva on an aveira is supposed to be embarrassed that they did something. Are you embarrassed about what you did when you tell your children? Does that embarrassment come out in your voice? Or is it just a nonchalant thing that you say, perhaps even with pride, you know, look what I am now when I used to be that. It's an attitude towards what you used to do. Imagine if, let's say, you were a bank robber. It wasn't the movies, it was a bank robbery. And I'm not comparing movies to robbing banks. It's a mushal, not a dimion, an analogy, not a comparison. He used to rob banks, used to hurt people. Imagine telling your children, well, I used to mug people in the streets. I used to rob people, hit them over the head. I used to stab them. I used to hurt people. I was a really bad person. And now, you know, I'm a good person. If you ever decide to reveal that to your children, just imagine with what kind of embarrassment and what kind of shame and regret that information would be given over. If you really believe that the act that you committed was wrong and sinful, and when you disseminate that information, if you end up disseminating that information to your children, the same shame and embarrassment should be there in your voice. Reason why, the primary reason why children feel that it's hypocritical, when it's really not, everybody makes mistakes, is because not that they know now, not that they realize that their parents used to do that, but that they don't see major embarrassment or major shame on the part of the person that's giving over this information. I did it, everything's fine, and now look at the way I am, now I'm okay. If that's the attitude with which it's given over, then the child will pick that up. In short, if your children do find out, or if you do tell them about things that you did in the past that you regret, things that are aveiros, things that you don't want them to do, it has to come with the proper attitude. The proper attitude is an attitude of shame, it's an attitude of embarrassment. If your face turns red when you tell this to your children, I don't know why you're telling it to them, but if you do, and your face turns red, they're going to look at it a lot differently than if you tell it to them over the Shabbos table nonchalant. You may think to yourself, well, I'm not ashamed of what I used to be, this is the way I was brought. Roy, you're supposed to be ashamed if you did tshuva. That's part of it. That's the Rambam right over there, next to the one we read. You're supposed to be ashamed. You're supposed to be a new person. You suppose your attitude is supposed to be, well, I'm not the same person that I was. Rambam says the Baal Tshuva even gives himself a different name. And if that shame and embarrassment comes out, that's the first step. That's the first thing. If you must tell your children what you did or what you used to do, it has to be done with tears in your eyes. You have to be done with blushing. Has to be done with embarrassment and shame, as if you would tell him that you used to be a mugger. There's another thing also. In order for children to absorb this properly, they have to have been exposed to the proper groundwork and the proper foundation, the proper background, certain hashkafa that's going to pave the way for this information to go smoothly, and that is as follows. It's a hashkafa that we said here a long time ago. It's good for all children, but for children who find out such information about their parents, it becomes a necessity. And that is this. Life, according to the Torah, is a struggle. Life does not go smoothly. Sheva yipol tzaddik vakam. The tzaddik falls seven times before he succeeds. Putna writes that it's a sickness that we have, that when we speak, that's his words, it's a sickness, that when we speak about our gedolim, we only speak about the bottom line, the conclusion, the end greatness of theirs. When we speak about the Chofetz Chaim, for instance, he says how everybody is impressed and surprised and astonished at the purity of speech that the Chofetz Chaim had. But nobody speaks about all the downfalls and failures that the Chofetz Chaim experienced on his way to becoming the Chofetz Chaim. Yes, the Chofetz Chaim did speak Lashon Hara. He was born like everybody else. He wasn't born with a Sefer Shmiras HaLashon in his hand. The Chofetz Chaim was a human being like anybody else. He worked on himself and worked on himself, and he fell and he got up and he fell and he got up until he became the Chofetz Chaim. And so on and so forth. It's a perception of Gedolim that we don't have. We look at Gedolim like angels, and they are. But the angelic ingredient, the angelic component of theirs is not their perfection. It's their fortitude and their ability to fight and their persistence and their willingness to keep getting up after the Yetzer Hara knocks them down. A Gadol is a fighter more than anything else. And we have to teach this to our children, that life is a struggle, everybody falls, be prepared to fall, but you got to get up. And no, it's not hypocritical for a tzaddik who already fell seven times. Teach somebody that what I just did is a failure, but I am trying and I will continue trying to succeed. Everybody fails, but to try to fail, that's insane. What the kid is doing over here is he's saying, okay, I'm not going to try to succeed because you failed. It doesn't work. That's not hypocritical at all. If I fail, I tell you you're wrong for failing, that's hypocritical. If I fail, and I tell you that you're not allowed to try to fail, you have to try to succeed, that's not being hypocritical, that's being human. I tell you that if you're a failure, that if you fall, worthless. That's ridiculous, because I'm a human being and I fall too. All we could teach our children is that they have to keep struggling and have to keep trying. There's a difference. Very often we teach our children that success in Torah and mitzvahs is all that counts. Success really is the least that counts compared to the struggle. The Mesil Sisharim says, the purpose of a person in this world is la'amoid banisoyim, to pass tests. He doesn't say the purpose is to do mitzvahs. He doesn't say the purpose is to learn. He says the purpose is to pass tests. Hashem puts us in this world. It's like kaviyochel, lahavdil. It's like a game. Hashem puts us in this world and he gives us an opponent in a boxing ring. And the opponent is the Yetzer Hara. And he says, okay, go at him. And he knows that you're going to fall. You're going to be knocked down seven times before you get up and win. When somebody falls down and he tells his son, get up, fight. It's hypocritical because he once fell. But telling your child that you can't fall, then that's wrong. What you tell them is get up, like I got up. Falling is expected. It's expected that a person should do Averis. Nobody is perfect in this world. It's expected. The direction that we should be giving our Musa to our children is try. Get up. When you feel the Yetzer Hara, fight. That's all we could expect of them. Fight, fight, fight. Just like I fought. Sometimes you fall, sometimes I fall, sometimes we'll both fall. But the main thing is to fight. Common denominator is everybody has to fight that Yetzer Hara. That's it. It's what attitude it's been told to the child and what background the child has. And there's another thing here too. You have to know which child you're talking to also. Different children are affected differently by this. I told you, I think, once the story of when I was in yeshiva, there was a boy in the yeshiva that stole a car. He took the keys. There was a bacher in yeshiva. He took the keys from one of the yungalites in the kollel that was laying on his table in yeshiva, and he took the car out for a joyride. And called the police, and they found this bacher. The father of the bacher didn't know exactly what to do with him because he was shocked that his son would do such a thing, so he sent him to the Rosh Hashiva, that the Rosh Hashiva should tell him something. He comes into the Rosh Hashiva's office and he was crying. Tears were flowing down his cheeks. And the Rosh Hashiva asked him, "What did you do?" He wouldn't answer. The Rosh Hashiva asked again, "What did you do?" He said, "I can't say." He was ashamed. If I wanted to open up lines of communication, this boy was probably intimidated at the Rosh Hashiva's presence, even if he wouldn't have stolen a car. He told this boy, he said, "When I was your age, I rode a bicycle to the Aron Kodesh and back. You did couldn't be worse." Apparently somebody made a bet with this Rosh Hashiva when he was a young boy that he'd ride a bicycle into the Beis Medrash all the way to the front and back out again, and he did. Boy opened up in response to the Rosh Hashiva's confession and he said, "I stole a car." He said, "I was wrong. What you did could be worse. But I want you to know that the next day, boy came to yeshiva and drove into the yeshiva with a motorcycle. Yeshiva drove into the Beis Medrash with a bicycle. I'm only in the hall." That's what he said. It didn't have the right effect. And different kids are affected differently. There are certain kids that need to see that their parents, their Rosh Hashivas, are human. There are certain kids that don't have the maturity to be able to understand that, to be able to absorb that. You have to assess your child to find out which one of the two he is. But the truth is, if you could instill within him the maturity and inject within him those hashkafas that teach him that people are human beings and that life is a struggle, you will accelerate the maturing process such that all of these important pieces of information, these pieces of reality, will have a positive effect on him and not a negative effect. It's important for our children to know that their parents are human beings, and it's important for children to know that the Rosh Hashivas are human beings. However, can only be done if the child has the proper background to accept it in the proper light. And the proper background is what I described before. B, when you do reveal to him your human side, it has to be in such a way that you really, really feel shame and regret for those bad things that you did. Otherwise, don't bother telling him. That's an ounce of prevention. Now, you know what we're going to do now? We're going to continue with the questions. And if there are no questions, we're going to do the lecture. I promise you, we do everything backwards this evening. Are there any questions now? Question. Isn't it true that nowadays is a lot different than it was in those days, and the movies those days wasn't nearly as bad as it is nowadays, and so too regarding television? This is all true. However, number one, when Reb Moshe's tshuva was written about the movies, it wasn't written in the 90s. It was a long time ago when the movies were kosher. I take that back. The movies were a lot less unkosher than they are today. When the Rosh Hashivas and the Gedolim put out their tzetel asering television, it wasn't in the 90s or the 80s either, or the 70s. It was way before that. In addition, this argument is not going to sit well with your children, because everything is relative. Yes, the movies weren't as bad as they are today. Are you telling me he's going to say that it was fine to go? Are you going to tell me that you're telling me that nowadays it's 100% also and then it was 100% mutter? If you're not going to say that, then it's only a question of the severity of the crime. A crime it was nonetheless. Also, being that everything is relative, don't forget, movies that your child are going to are probably not the worst movies that's possible for him to see or possible for him to go to. Also, he knows that the movies are going to be worse in his kids' days. And so everything is relative. If you don't commit yourself to saying that what you did when you were a kid was 100% proper, not going to work, even if now it's much worse. So what are you going to say? Well, yeah, what I did was bad, but I'm telling you not to do it because nowadays it's worse. Was it okay when I did it? That's the hypocrisy that the kids smell. Because it wasn't as bad as it is now, therefore it was 100% okay. So how bad does something have to be before I don't do it? That's the question. That's a big problem. The argument, it won't work and it won't go over well with the kids. It just won't. I know in the olden days, society, even the Frum society, was much more liberal when it comes to these things. But that doesn't mean we have to justify it. I mean, every year, when I give Shir and Shul before Pesach about how to prepare your oven for Pesach, invariably there's a man or a woman that raises their hands and when I was a kid, we used the same oven, we just burnt it out, and maybe we went mixed swimming and we ate bazooka bubble gum and all sorts of things we did when we were kids. And it doesn't necessarily make it right. In those days, the standards of Yiddishkeit by the Chassidim, which didn't change their standards of Yiddishkeit, but otherwise, and it's a credit to our community that we've improved, but it was a lot different in those days. Doesn't mean it was a lot better. There are people who kept their stores open on Shabbos in those days because it was very, very big nisayon to lose your job. And although we can't judge those people until we're in their place. But nobody's going to justify what they did and say, well, it was okay, it was right, it was good. And once you concede that what was done is not good or okay or it wasn't right, then you have a issue when you tell your child that he shouldn't do it. Question. What should be done when you tell your son, parentheses, 16 years, that you don't want him to do something and he says, thank you, and then walks off and does exactly what you are against? But it's, I guess, when it says here, parentheses, 16 years, don't take that to mean that you expect a different answer if it would say 15 years or 17 years. It applies to everybody. What you have to do is, you have to restructure your relationship with that kid. Fact. Parents have no way to force a child to do anything. Doesn't work. You can threaten him with a gun, but unless you're there with that gun 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it's not going to work. And not only that, but Oynislav Kamandi Avidami, he's considered as if he didn't do it on his own free will. The only way for a parent to control their children, and this it says in the Sefarno and Parshas Bahaloischa, the only way for a parent to control their children when the child disagrees with the parent, is the parent to impress upon the child that the parent loves the child and that the instructions is coming out of love. Now, this doesn't come out of some New Age psychologist book. This is the Sefarno in Bahaloischa. That's exactly what he says. That the only way parents can control their children is if the children know that the parents love them, and that their statement is coming to them out of love, not out of shame. Let's say Reuven is a father, and he has a son, Shimon. And Reuven is embarrassed because of his son, and he tells his son, how dare you walk out like that? You look like a shagetz in the street. And Shimon knows that Reuven, his father, the motive for his instructions are is his own embarrassment at the people looking at his son that looks like a shagetz. That's not going to work. Because, like the Sefarno says, The only way to control your children is if they know you love them. And what it means is that the statement you're making is out of love, not out of embarrassment. It's for your sake, it's not for his sake. You all know the difference between types of love. When you say, I love you to your son, and you say, I love the chocolate bar. You say, I love ice cream. When you say, I love ice cream, you don't love the ice cream. Love yourself. The ice cream makes you feel good. And because the ice cream makes you feel good, you want the ice cream. But what you want, what you love, is your own good feeling. That's really what you love. The ice cream is just a facilitator. It's just an enzyme. It's just a messenger. It's just a tool for you to get that good feeling. You love yourself. You don't love the ice cream. When you say, I love you to your son, it's supposed to mean, not I love you because you give me such a good feeling. Or I love you because everybody comes over to me and says, oh, what a great son you have. But I love you because of you. Not because Yaakov Avinu, when it says when Yaakov worked for Rachel, he worked all those years, he worked 7 years, and it seems like just a few days. Yomim Achadim. The question is, if you are working 7 years at hard labor, and you are frustrated because there's something you want and you don't have, then every day would feel like 7 years. Not 7 years feeling like days. Time flies when you enjoy yourself. Not when you're not enjoying yourself, not when you're working hard, not when you're frustrated. They say that the pshat is that the only time the frustration sets in and days seem like years is when the item that you're working for, your goal, is really a goal that makes you feel good. You want that thing. You want that job because that job will make you feel good. You don't love the job, you love yourself. When you're working towards a goal and you don't really love that thing, but it's the type of love that you have for a chocolate bar, then yes, every day is going to feel like years. But when it said that Yaakov loved Rachel, it didn't mean he loved Rachel because Rachel made him feel good. He loved Rachel because of what Rachel was. And not because of the feeling she gave to him. And so he put his own feelings aside. If they didn't count, that wasn't the point. And every day that he worked towards Rachel, that was an accomplishment. It wasn't a frustration. It was another step towards his goal. Another step towards getting towards that point where he loves nothing. Another step closer to his love. If that's the case, then years will seem like days. And even parents that say they love their children, you have to interpret that. Do you love your child because through him you get honor? Through him you get respect. Through him you get nachas. Or do you love him because of him? There's a very big difference. You're interested in his good. And that's what the Sepharno means. That the only way parents have to control children is if children know that parents love them. And that's the answer to your question. The answer is that there's nothing to do in terms of, okay, here's a trick or there's a trick. Yeah, you could force him, you can threaten him, you can do all of these things, but I'm sure you know that already without me. What needs to be done in such a case is look at this case as a symptom of a broken relationship. Restructure the relationship, and it doesn't happen overnight. Be prepared for many times where you tell the kid, don't do this or do this, and he says thank you very much and he does it, until that relationship is repaired. It doesn't happen overnight. Hazayrim b'dima barina yiktsayru. And it's not me that says it, and it's not some psychologist or some self-help book. This is what the Torah has to say about this. You would perhaps expect the Torah to say that the way to control your children is to threaten them with a patch. Or maybe you'd expect the Torah to say that the way to control children is by being matil eimo yisera, by instilling within them excess fear, of you. That's not so. Chalila, that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says that if you want to control your children, make sure your children understand that you love them. And they'll be controlled. That's what the Torah says. Continue. One of the great problems that we face nowadays with our children is confusion. Confusion is a great enemy. Children are confused as to what's right for them or what's wrong for them, what's harmful to them or what's beneficial. Children are confused as to what they want to be, how they want to be, what's important in Frumkeit and what's not. There are many reasons for this confusion. Sometimes it's within the family itself, sometimes it's within the yeshiva, sometimes it's within the child's own head. There is something beyond all of that, something in society itself that lends itself to confusion, something that we all have to watch out for and something that we can do something about. It used to be olden days, every town had one rav, one shul, maybe two, one kehillah. Child grew up, knew who his Torah authority was. Doesn't mean he always listened, but at least he knew who it was. He knew where his yeshiva was, and we acted accordingly. Nowadays it's different. Nowadays a child grows up in Flatbush, he grows up in Borough Park. Baruch Hashem, we have so many Torah institutions. There's a price to pay for this. So many different Torah institutions that cater to so many different people, different types of children. And we, in our desire to fulfill the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamoicha, treat them almost with equal status. Children grow up, and they see that in the yeshiva across the street there are frum kids, but life is a little easier. Why can't I be like them? There are so many different types of Jews that we cater to. From those that we teach Aleph Beis, all the way in the other extreme, to the point where there are so many different opinions as to what the other extreme is, children are confused. I once read about a certain psychological disorder that when a person walks into a big grocery store, he sees on the shelf 20 different brands of soup in the cans. He's overwhelmed. He just can't make the choice. Just, should I take this, this, that? If you give him two or three choices, he can handle it. But he just can't handle a dozen different cans of soup. In his mind, he has to be able to figure out 12 reasons not to take the soup and one reason to take the 13th can. He just can't do it. It's a psychological disorder. When people go into the big grocery stores, they come out a wreck. They're all confused. They have so many choices, they just can't handle it. Our children are victim to the same thing. So many choices nowadays. I don't like this yeshiva. A kid doesn't, his Rebbe looks at him the wrong way. I want to go to a different yeshiva. I want to switch. I want to switch camps. I want to switch yeshivas. I want to switch classes. I want to switch rebbeim. And we are so accommodating. We are such an accommodating generation. Accommodate everybody. Baal Tshuva, accommodate him. The modern Jew, accommodate him. This, accommodate everybody. I'm not chalila casting aspersions on accommodating people, but the price to pay is once this accommodating mentality creeps into our children, the idea is, okay, I have choices. I don't like this. I'm doing something else. It used to be that a success would take effort. No pain, no gain. Our children today are not used to pain. They're not used to struggling. So easy. Much easier than it used to be. Where do you find a child nowadays that knows how to do math? We all have calculators. We don't need to struggle nowadays. Children don't realize that in order to achieve something, you have to put in effort and you have to suffer pain in order to achieve. Children drop out of school because school annoys them. Oh, what if school annoys you? Is it not worth it? The answer is, there's nothing worth suffering pain anymore. Nowadays, we live in a society, if something is hard, we'll make it easier. Goal is to make life easy. Technology, a new idea, everything is to make life easier. And if a child has a choice between making life more difficult but accomplishing, or making life easier but failing, he'd rather make life easier but fail, because making life easier has become an accomplishment in and of itself nowadays. If I make life easier for myself, I am a success. That's the attitude. If I make life easier, I achieved something today. And it's so easy for our children to make life easier that it becomes a problem. See, they don't want to fail. They just have a different idea of success. They removed an annoyance. Remove the pain. That's success by them. Aye, they just dropped out of school. Aye, they just lowered their standards of Yiddishkeit. Aye, they just lost a lot. They just harmed themselves. Doesn't matter. They made life easier. They removed an annoyance. They accomplished. That's life nowadays. There are so many ways that society has shifted, distorted, perverted our ideas of success. There's this lady who I'm dealing with in my capacity as a Rav Nebuch, a divorce case, and the woman is a New Age hippie. And the main thing in her life is to feel good. That's what all her psychologists and psychiatrists told her. You have to feel good about yourself. To feel good. Fill your emotional needs and have a good feeling. When it's time to visit her children, it's a sticky situation because of the divorce. There isn't. She just doesn't go visit her children. Why? Because her emotional well-being, she has to feel good about herself, and this way she'll feel better about herself without involving herself in this mess. Rabbeinu Shalom, it's your children. But to this woman, feeling good is more important than anything else. In the way of the children, she has to feel good. What kind of person wouldn't feel good by seeing their children is a different story. But that's her goal, to feel good. And this feel-good thing is so, has so deeply infiltrated our minds. There's a woman who contacted me. She's studying to be a social worker, and she's writing her master's on yeshiva kids dropping out of school. And she told me a number of times, and I was glad to help her with whatever information I could provide. And one of the things she asked me, she says, well, Rabbi Shapiro, when you were a kid, you said that you had boys in your class, in your yeshiva, that were bad influences, that were undesirable characters. Why didn't you follow them? I don't understand the question. Why should I do something that's self-destructive? You want to know why I didn't follow them? Why? Should do something to harm myself because somebody else is doing something to harm themselves. I didn't understand. She says to me, well, how did you feel about yourself not wanting to bond with these undesirable influences? Explains that question. She says, you're frum because you feel good about it. Hold on. No, I am not frum because I feel good about it. Oh, I do. I am frum because in the year 2448, Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah on Har Sinai. Now, he told Moshe Rabbeinu that we have to fulfill these 613 things. And that's why I'm frum. Feeling good. Feeling good has become, it's just out of hand. It's out of hand. The child does, it's come to the point where if a child doesn't feel good in school, there's a problem with the environment, with the situation. Let me leave, so now I'll feel good. Things have taken over. Success is defined differently. Success is defined by experiencing a pleasure, having a good feeling, avoiding annoying situation, avoiding pain. Now, if success is nowadays defined as avoiding pain, and if there's no pain, no gain, where are we? If that's not utter confusion, I don't know what is. A long discussion with this lady about feelings and stuff. I explained to her something that I learned when I was in high school and I had these undesirable influences in my class. I was in driver's ed. They taught me that if you're driving a car at 7 miles an hour and you hit an ice patch, you go into a skid. Your instinct, your feeling, is going to be to slam on the brakes. If you do that, you're dead. You have to put your feelings aside and do what's beneficial to you. Use your head and think. And into the skid and this way and that way. If you follow your feelings and your entire goal, your objective, is to feel good and do what feels right, you're dead. That's what I learned in high school. Driver's ed on Coney Island Avenue. Same thing applies to your neshama. Do what feels right, what feels good. Very often you're dead. We have to teach our children this very important lesson. We have to tell it to them explicitly, and we have to teach them by example, because it's a fact of life that is under fire by 20th century thinking. Modern 20th century thinking. Success, accomplishment comes through effort, through hard work, through pain, through long, hard hours. Making something easier for yourself is not a sign of success. Not necessarily a sign of failure, but it's no sign of success. You made life easier for yourself. That does not necessarily mean that you accomplished anything. A mile of loymoirid. You have to teach this to them day in and day out. Because this is really the primary point of confusion that our children have. Life is a struggle, like we said before. It doesn't go easy. Not for the Chofetz Chaim. Not for anybody. A lot of reasons for this. A lot of things we do that compounds the problem. Olden days, if you wanted to be an expert in all of Shas, it was very hard. It was very hard. Hey, 7 years you spend an hour dreaming in your Daf Yomi Shir, and you make a Siyum on Shas. Once you open the telephone, and you have a slew of Shiurim and Hashkafas and all sorts of things on the train, you put on your Walkman, and that's Talmud Torah, that's learning. The effort, the breaking your head over it, it's not necessary anymore. In our attempt to spread Torah, we've made it easier, more accessible to people, but the price that we pay is that when we need to put in that effort, we are not used to it anymore. And we have children that say, well, why should I bother finishing high school? I can get my GED 12 weeks in a class and I have my high school diploma. So why should I bother doing it the hard way if I can do it the easy way? The hard way is better? That's not the point. Our children nowadays don't hear that. That's a great source of communications gap between parents and children. We're talking to them how to do it better, and they're talking to us how to do it easier. By them, easier is the goal. By us, better is the goal. Because nowadays, in today's society, easier, making life easier, is a goal in and of itself. You have to understand that. They don't want to fail. They don't want to do the wrong thing. They want to accomplish. They want to succeed. But making life easier is an accomplishment by them. We have to attack this head on. We have to teach them. It's not an accomplishment. to teach them that life is hard, that you don't become the Chafetz Chaim by listening to the 5 minute a day Daf Yomi Shir. That you don't become a Baki Bashas by going an hour a day for 7 years. That you don't accomplish anything without hard work. We have to show them that we are not interested in making life easier for ourselves at the expense of accomplishment. There are so many ways that we have to show that to our children. Do things the hard way if it will get done better. I'm not talking about throwing away your computers or throwing away all the modern technology that makes life easier. Like I said, making life easier doesn't mean you failed either. It's like my love, like my read. It doesn't replace accomplishment. There's a place for feelings too. It's okay to feel good. It's okay to feel good. But that cannot substitute for accomplishment. Totally different things. We're not frum because we feel good about it. From because it's the right thing to do. We would feel good about it, but even if we don't, we have a job in this world. And therefore, always possible. Nantam levanecha. Our job, because our children will not get this message anywhere else. They will not get it from society. They will not get it in the colleges. They will not get it in the high schools. If your rebbeim are good, they will try to instill it within them there. But it doesn't exempt us from our responsibility to teach our children that life is a struggle and that accomplishment only comes through effort. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, in 3 words it sums up the entire concept. Lefum Tzara Agra. According to the Tsar, according to the pain, is the reward. They sometimes say that, but that's a different taina. In other words, some kids think that they're really accomplishing something by making their life easier. They think that, yes, when they're 40 years old, they nebuch are over the hill and they have no more, they can no longer accomplish when they're 40 what they can accomplish when they're 16. 40-year-olds have a harder life than 16-year-old life. And therefore, they may as well chaparai now. This is just a variation of the old Spartan hashkafa, worships youth. But whereas they worship the strength and the physical prowess of youth, children today worship the laziness or the easiness of youth, the lack of responsibility, the lack of pain of youth. Therefore, they say, well, yes, when I'm 40, I'll have to straighten out, but now let me have my fun. Let me have my fun means, why should I waste my life accomplishing now if I could make things easier? They consider making life easier superior to accomplishment. Just when they're 40, they don't have a choice. Somebody with a family, children, supposed to make life easier for themselves. What are they supposed to do? Drop out? Married life? There are people that do that too, for that reason. The 16-year-old has at least enough sense to realize that that's not really a viable option. So when he says, well, let me have my fun now and I'll straighten out later, what it means is, let me chaparain my accomplishments now. When I get older, I know that I'll have no choice but to have a difficult life. Well, sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes they want to get it out of their system, and that needs a different response. If the child just wants to get it out of a system, that means he doesn't realize that, he doesn't think that that's making life easier is an accomplishment in and of itself. He just thinks making life easier is just giving in to his Yetzirah. He just wants a taste of it so he doesn't feel deprived. Right, that's a totally different attitude. It's not a good one. But it's not the one that we're talking about tonight. To that kid, you have to explain to them, first of all, the dangers of that. That once you crawl in, it's not so easy to crawl out. It's always so easy to crawl out. Again, it depends why he wants to this lifestyle now and then later change. So then there are answers. You show him, not statistics, because we don't have statistics, but examples of people that he knows that have tried that and have not succeeded. Let him show you people that have. Let him speak to those people. There are people, there are kids that really messed up life, and then in 1920 they straighten out. But those kids will be the first to say they were so lucky that it had a lasting effect, and although they look like they lead a straight life, but the scars are always there. Truth has nothing to be scared of. If a kid says, this is a good way to go, this will make me happy, check it out. Let him check it out. Let him see. Show him. Look. Okay, you think it'll make you happy? Look, what did it do for these people? What did it do for those people? Speak to them, every single one. I want to tell you, every single kid that I know that dropped out of school, and I'm talking a couple hundred, every single one, without exception, not happy about it. They all do it. They drop out more and more and more, but not one of them is happy. As school was too frum and too pressurized and too structured and just unwanted by them and undesirable, they drop out of school, they regret it. Every single one, not 90% of the time, 100% of the time. Even if they don't say, oh, I regret it terribly, they will admit their unhappiness. Close to the kids in school that they abandoned, that they left behind in their dust, much happier than them. That's the biggest argument against dropping out. Drop out in order to be happy? Take a look at what's in store for you. That's the answer. Again, that's a different attitude. We're talking about a kid over here who says, unhappy, but easier. It may not be the most enjoyable life, but it's the more easier life. He's trained to make life easier. Go in the direction of whatever's easier. That's what society tells us today. Why should you drive a manual, a stick shift, when you can drive an automatic? Why should you have a regular diaper when you have a disposable diaper? Why should you have a hard life when you can have an easy life? And when you're dealing with diapers or cars, it's true. Because you're not looking to get your schar or your accomplishment or your fulfillment in this world from the diaper or from the car. Well, why not? Why not make life easier? But what happens is that this attitude, because the world is so commercialized and this is the way society is, it spills over into our life philosophy. Why should you have a hard life if you can have an easy life? Unhappy, unaccomplished, unfulfilled, unsatisfying, but easier. That's the main thing. That's what counts. And this is what we have to battle against day after day.